Bob Carr and Andrew Rapshorgi, distinguished members of Parliament, guests, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I'm very pleased to be here today at the launch of Australia's celebration of the 1993 International Year of the World's Indigenous People. It will be a year of great significance for Australia. It comes at a time when we've committed ourselves to succeeding in the test which so far we've always failed. Because in truth, we cannot confidently say that we've succeeded if we've not managed to extend opportunity and care, dignity and hope to the Indigenous people of Australia, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. This is a fundamental test of our social goals and our national will. Our ability to say to ourselves and to the rest of the world that Australia is a first-rate social democracy, that we are what we should be, truly the land of a fair go and the better chance. There is no more basic test, I think, of how seriously we mean these things. It's in tests of our self-knowledge, of how well we know the land we live in, how well we know our history, how well we recognise the fact that, complex as our contemporary identity is, it cannot be separated from Aboriginal Australia. How well we know what Aboriginal Australians know about Australia. Redfern is a good place to contemplate these things, as Sol said a few moments ago. Just a mile or two from this place, where the first European settlers landed, in too many ways it tells us that the failure to bring much more than devastation and demoralisation to Aboriginal Australia continues to be our failure. More, I think, than most Australians recognise, the plight of Aboriginal Australians affects us all. In Redfern, it might be tempting to think that the reality Aboriginal Australians face is somehow contained here, and that the rest of us are insulated from it. But of course, while all the dilemmas may exist here, as we all know, they're far from contained. We know the same dilemmas and more are faced all over Australia. That is perhaps the point of this year of the world's Indigenous people, to bring the dispossessed out of the shadows, to recognise that they are part of us, that we cannot give Indigenous Australians up without giving up many of our own deeply held values, much of our identity, and indeed our own humanity. Nowhere in the world, I would venture, is the message more stark than Australia. We cannot simply sweep injustice aside. Even if our own conscience allowed us to, I'm sure that in due course the world and the people of our region would not. There should be no mistake about this. Our success in resolving these issues will have a significant bearing on our standing in the world. And Sol mentioned this morning that Lois O'Donoghue will be speaking in a historic speech to the United Nations, making this very point. But however intractable the problems seem, we can't resign ourselves to failure any more than we can hide behind our opponents, our political opponents' contemporary version of social Darwinism, which says that to reach back for the poor and dispossessed is to risk being dragged down. It seems to me not only morally indefensible, but bad history. We non-Aboriginal Australians should perhaps remind ourselves that Australia once reached out for us. Didn't Australia provide opportunity and care for the dispossessed Irish? Did it not for the poor of Britain? the refugees from war and famine and persecution in the countries of Europe and Asia, if it isn't reasonable to say that if we can build a prosperous and remarkable, harmonious, multicultural society in Australia, surely we can find just solutions to the problems which beset the first Australians, the people to whom the most injustice has been done. And as I say, the starting point might be to recognise that the problem starts with us, the non-Aboriginal Australians. It begins, I think, with an act of recognition. Recognition that it was we who did the dispossessing. We took the traditional lands and smashed the traditional way of life. We brought the diseases and the alcohol. We committed the murders. We took the children from their mothers. We practiced discrimination and exclusion. It was our ignorance and our prejudice and our failure to imagine that these things could be done to us. With some noble exceptions, we failed to make the most basic human response and enter into their hearts and minds. We failed to ask, how would I feel if this was done to me? As a consequence, we failed to see that what we were doing degraded us all. If we need a reminder of this, we received it in this year with the report of the Royal Commission to Aboriginal Deaths in Custody, which showed with devastating clarity that the past lives on in inequality, racism and injustice, in the prejudice and ignorance of non-Aboriginal Australians, and in the demoralisation and desperation, the fractured identity of so many Aborigines and Torres Strait Islanders. For all this, I do not believe that the report should fill us with guilt. Down the years, there's been no shortage of guilt, but it has not produced the response we need. Guilt, I think we've all learned, is not a very constructive emotion. I think what we need to do is to open our hearts a bit, all of us. Perhaps when we recognise what we have in common, we will see the things which must be done, the practical things. There's something of this in the creation of the Council for Aboriginal Reconstruction. The Council's mission is to forge a new partnership built on justice and equity and an appreciation of the heritage of Australia's Indigenous people. In the abstract, those terms are meaningless. We have to give meaning to justice and equity, and as I've said several times this year, we will only give them meaning when we commit ourselves to achieving concrete results. If we improve the living conditions in one town, they will improve in another and another. If we raise the standard of health by 20% one year, it'll be raised more the next. If we open one door, others will follow. When we see improvement, we will see more dignity, more confidence, more happiness. We will know we're going to win. We will need these practical building blocks of change. As Sol said, the Mabo judgment should be seen as one of these. By doing away with a bizarre concept that this continent had no owners prior to the settlement of Europeans, Mabo establishes a fundamental truth and lays the basis for justice. It'll be much easier to work from that basis than it's ever been from any case in the past. For that reason alone, we should ignore the isolated outbreaks of hysteria and hostility to Mabo which we've heard in the past few months. Mabo is an historic decision. We can make it an historic turning point, the basis of a new relationship between Indigenous and non-Aboriginal Australians. The message should be that there's nothing to fear or to lose in the recognition of historical truth, or the extension of social justice, or the deepening of Australian social democracy to include Indigenous Australians. In fact, as all of us I think here know, there's everything to gain. Even the unhappy past speaks for this. Where Aboriginal Australians have been included in the life of Australia, they have made remarkable contributions. Economic contributions, particularly in the pastoral and agricultural industry. They are there in the frontier and exploration history of Australia. They were there in the wars, in sport to an extraordinary degree, in literature and art and in music. In all these things, they've shaped our knowledge of this continent and of ourselves. They've shaped our identity. They are there in the Australian legend. And we should never forget, they've helped us build this nation. And if we have a sense of justice, as well as common sense, we will forge a new partnership. As I said, it might help if we non-Aboriginal Australians imagined ourselves dispossessed of land we had lived on for 50,000 years, and then imagined ourselves told that it had never been ours. Imagine if ours was the oldest culture in the world and we were told that it was worthless. Imagine if we had resisted this settlement, suffered and died in the defence of our land, and then were told in history books that we'd given up without a fight. Imagine if non-Aboriginal Australians had served their country in peace and war and were then ignored in history books. Imagine if our feats on the sporting fields had inspired admiration and patriotism and yet did nothing to diminish prejudice. Imagine if our spiritual life was denied and ridiculed. Imagine if we had suffered the injustice and then were blamed for it. It seems to me, if we can imagine the injustice, we can imagine the opposite. And we can have justice. I say we can have justice for two reasons. I say it because I believe that the great things about Australian social democracy reflect a fundamental belief in justice. And I say it because in so many other areas, we have proved our capacity over the years to go on extending the realms of participation, opportunity and care. Just as Australians living in the relatively narrow and insular Australia of the 1960s imagined a culturally diverse, worldly and open Australia, and in a generation turned this into a reality, so we can turn the goals of reconciliation into a reality. There are very good signs that the process has begun. The creation of the Reconciliation Council is evidence of this. The establishment of ATSIC, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Commission, is also evidence. The Council indeed is the product of imagination and goodwill. ATSIC emerges from the vision of Indigenous self-determination and self-management. The vision's already become the reality of almost 800 elected Aboriginal regional councillors and commissioners determining priorities and developing their own programs. All over Australia, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities are taking charge of their own lives, and assistance with the problems which chronically beset them is at last being made available in ways developed by the communities themselves. If these things offer hope, so does the fact that this generation of Australians is better informed about Aboriginal culture and Aboriginal achievement, and about the injustice that has been done, and than any generation before it has so been aware. So we are beginning to more generally appreciate the depth and the diversity of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures. From their music and art and dance, we're beginning to recognise how much richer our national life and identity will be for the participation of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. We're beginning to learn that the Indigenous people have known for many thousands of years how to live with our physical environment. ever so gradually, we're learning to see Australia through Aboriginal eyes, beginning to recognise the wisdom contained in their epic story. I think we're beginning to see how much we owe the Indigenous Australians and how much we've lost by living so apart. I said we non-Indigenous Australians should try to imagine the Aboriginal view. It can't be too hard. Someone imagined this event today, and it's now a reality and a great reason for hope. But there's one thing today we cannot imagine. We cannot imagine that the descendants of people whose genius and resilience maintained a culture here through 50,000 years or more, through cataclysmic changes to the climate and the environment, and who then survived two centuries of dispossession and abuse, will be denied their place in the modern Australian nations. We can't imagine that. We cannot imagine that we'll fail. And with the spirit that is here today, I'm confident that we won't fail. I'm confident we will succeed in this decade. Thank you very much for listening to me. Yeah.